You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
This week, I spoke to ACT MP Simon Court about some of the party's environmental policies. We spoke about the party's proposed changes to the RMA, including their shift to a property rights basis and how they plan to enforce this. We also covered their changes to freshwater management, their proposed removal of Te Mana o Te Wai, integrating Mātauranga Māori, and reversing the ban on oil and gas exploration. My first question about ACT's proposal to sort of make changes to the RMA and what kinds of changes you guys are planning to make.
There's so many things that we're doing with our environment that aren't actually improving the environment, and there's so many things that we're doing with planning rules that aren't helping us build houses and infrastructure. So I got to sit on the Environment Committee, listen to all the debate on Labor's proposed resource management reforms, and then to propose ACT's alternative after doing some research over about 18 months, both here in New Zealand and in the US. The current Resource Management Act and its replacement, Labor's Natural and Built Environments Act, what it does, it welds environmental protection and urban and infrastructure development into one integrated piece of regulation. That's what the RMA was meant to do in 1991, to say if you're going to build something in the natural environment, you need to take account of your effects on the environment. Fair enough. But in other jurisdictions, like in Australia, UK, US, for example, they actually have a separate environmental protection pathway from the permitting process to develop infrastructure and housing. And the reason they do that is because if there are threatened species, if there are sensitive environments that are being built in, the question isn't, should you be allowed to build there? It's actually, if you're going to be building in existing urban environments on modified rural lands, for example, then, of course, get on and we'll give you a consent for that, no questions asked, if it's your land or your infrastructure corridor. The question is, how do you mitigate those effects on special places, threatened species and unique environments? And if we look around New Zealand right now, you look at all of the rural land, all of our urban land, it would be very difficult to make the case that you shouldn't build there or only build there with very strict conditions because it's highly modified. And what ACT wants to see is more affordable land for housing because we've provided the infrastructure so that we can build on it, whether that's in existing urban environments or out on the edges of existing towns. We also want to see a far more rigorous approach to managing the effects on fresh water, for example, of the excess discharge of nutrients from certain types of land use activities. So our resource management proposal we call ACT Solutions for Building New Zealand and Conserving Nature. The listeners can find it at act.org.nz, and there's a lot of detail there about urban planning and development, water quality, and how we actually fund and finance infrastructure that enables us to have better functioning cities and provide more affordable land for affordable housing.
And one of the policies that's on the document is basically having a shift to a property rights basis where people can essentially do as they like as long as they don't harm anyone or the environment. But how will you enforce this?
That's right. What's important is if you are a landowner, if you want to develop, say, four houses where currently there is one, that's happening all over Auckland where I live. Sometimes it's many more than four. It's 7, 9, 11. Then ACT policy will say you only need to consult with your neighbour about effects like overshadowing, overlooking, for example. And if your neighbour doesn't agree with what you're proposing or they say the effects are greater than I can accept, then what ACT would have is the developer and the neighbour go to a planning tribunal at the same level as essentially the disputes tribunal or district court. And at that point, a planning adjudicator would determine the value of any overshadowing or diminishing of your neighbour's property rights. And we think it's a much fairer way to sort things out than councils having to decide what consent conditions might be on a developer or a development, which often just make it more expensive, more complex to build, add to the cost of developing the land that the houses will sit on, and hardly ever actually satisfy the neighbour because the thing's still going to get built. The neighbour's still going to have the effects. Just the neighbour doesn't receive any acknowledgement or compensation. They just have cost and stress. That brings our approach to the to looking at it from a property rights perspective is much fairer on the neighbours, and also enables more land for development. And then when we think about protecting the environment, well, every region of New Zealand has different soil types, different topography, different range of land uses. Some parts of the South Island, it's more cropping than dairy. Look around the North Island, there's a lot of sheep and beef farming goes on around the country. But we also have New Zealand's largest metros, you know, Auckland, Hamilton, Tauranga, for example. And if we want to protect the environment in different places, then ACT would have your regional councils determining the environmental limits, say for fresh water, whether it's the amount of water that needs to stay in a river or the amount of nutrients that can be discharged to a river. There has to be an environmental bottom line that protects the environment. But at the moment, if you want to get water out of a river, or if you want to carry out an activity like farming that discharges to fresh water, you need a resource consent. ACT would say that existing permits need to be transferred into a market-based system so that people who want to use the remaining available water discharge to that waterway can actually fit into a market. Otherwise, we risk over-allocation of either nutrients or water, and there's no way to transfer permits between farmers and other land users to make sure we get the most efficient use of the land. In the end, we're just degrading our environment, and there's no clear way to value the water, for example, that people say, I need it for farming. Others say, I need it for manufacturing. Other people say, well, you know, we need it to stay in the river. Our market-based approach in our alternative to the RMA, ACT Solutions for Building New Zealand and Conserving Nature, sets out how that would work, and it's based on a model developed by the University of Canterbury researchers Mark Milkey and John Raffensperger, who I interviewed as part of my research to develop ACT's policy.
Moving into the freshwater management policies, can you outline a little bit more on the proposed changes that ACT wants to make?
Certainly. We have over-allocated nutrients in places around New Zealand. You talk to federated farmers, anyone who's visited parts of Southland which underwent large-scale dairy conversions over the past 20-plus years, they will agree that water quality is not where it needs to be. But all of those people have resource consents which confer a property right for them to use the land and discharge from that land into surrounding waterways. What ACT would do under our freshwater policies is set an environmental limit on the water quality in each one of those waterways. It would be set at a regional level by regional councils. And then if the water quality is not at that limit yet, then all of the permits that have been allocated shifted into a market model would then have a value associated with them. And for those farmers or land users who wanted to continue operating, they would have to bid into the market so that they can get they can continue essentially to carry out their business activities, but it's likely they'd have to pay more for the nutrient discharges over time. And there would be a sinking lid on nutrient charges, essentially a cap and trade market, so that the natural environment eventually returned to the desired environmental limit state over a certain period, and we might pick a decade, for example, as the target period. We just think that's a much fairer way for land users and farmers and people who value the environment to see very clearly what the trade-offs are, but also what the value is of either water or nutrients that are discharged, the value or the cost. We think it's a much more enduring and fair way to achieve our environmental objectives while respecting property rights.
Under the same document, ACT is wanting to remove Te Mana o Te Wai. Why is that?
Te Mana o Te Wai is a vague spiritual concept that was introduced by a national-led government back in 2014, and it now permeates every aspect of resource management and freshwater management. What it says is that there's a hierarchy in the way we look at water, and we must look at water through a Te Ao Māori perspective. Jack says, well, actually, all New Zealanders look at water the same. We either need it for drinking water, we need it to run our business, or we need it to stay in the rivers or be clean enough to be in the rivers so we can use it so the environment can benefit from that. But this vague spiritual concept means that decision makers, planners, or even somebody who wants to build a shed on their property has to first take account of the Māori or life force of the water. That's the number one hierarchy in Te Mana o Te Wai. Only then can water be considered for drinking water supply. And after that, third on the list for economic and social benefits. And ACT says that's wrong. There is no country in the world that has succeeded in improving economic and social outcomes for people by imposing vague spiritual concepts on decision makers around natural resources like water. That's why we don't think it belongs in the in any resource management or other water allocation framework. That doesn't mean we don't respect Māori culture and beliefs that people have. It's just that doesn't belong in a decision-making approach around natural resources that all New Zealanders benefit from.
Does that mean that ACT does not have any plans to include Mātauranga Māori in environmental management?
Well, Mātauranga Māori is a traditional Māori knowledge of the environment and of their surroundings. It's important when we are thinking about planning, for example, you know, where coastal settlement might occur or where hazards and risks to coastal settlement might have occurred. If we were to understand the oral history of people who've lived there before Europeans came, they might be able to share some observations around where's a safe place to build and how far the tsunami came up when it came up the beaches, for example. So there is definitely a role for Mātauranga Māori, but where does it sit compared to science? Where does it sit compared to other written or archaeological or geological information? Well, I don't know if you've ever heard of witness testimony, but you know, the more times it gets handed down and the more people retell what the first witness said, the less reliable it gets. The Act does believe there's a place for Mātauranga Māori, but it can't be the thing that governs or has preeminence over other information when people are making decisions about land use planning and freshwater allocation, for example.
Just touching base on ACT's renewable energy policies, one of them is to reverse the ban on oil and gas exploration. Tell us a little bit more about why that is and why it's important.
Well, New Zealand needs affordable and reliable energy and electricity so that we can achieve our economic and social outcomes, you know, uplifting people from where they are now to where we would like them to be. If you look at communities like Taranaki, the average or the median wage there is higher than elsewhere in New Zealand. It's $86,000 a year. You look at Kaitaia, a region which has, you know, very little resource development going on up there. The average wage is, you know, somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 a year, the median income. You know, so what ACT would like to see is more parts of New Zealand, you know, being uplifted like Taranaki has through energy and resource development. And in order to do that, we actually need to enable the access to these resources, not just to oil and gas, but also to mineral resources that currently lie in the public lands, what people might call stewardship land under the control of Department of Conservation, for example, along the west coast of the South Island. What we want to do with reversing the ban on oil and gas, we currently have got less than 10 years supply of natural gas left. Even the Climate Commission says that we're going to need gas out past 2050. It's important we have access to that fuel for decarbonisation as well as reliability and affordability. EnergyLink did a study showing that between 2017 and 2022, if New Zealand's energy producers had switched to gas instead of coal, they could have saved 3.8 million tonnes of emissions over that five-year period. That's an enormous quantity of emissions reduction available by switching from coal to gas. And we have phenomenal quantities of gas off the east coast of Canterbury and the Canterbury Basin, as well as an offshore Taranaki a little bit further out from where the current well field's being developed. ACT says, look, if Rishi Sunak in the UK is putting out 100 permit applications to get back into the North Sea and further out, you know, Norway has used the revenues from their gas energy to pay to electrify their economy and provide the highest standards of healthcare and education here in Europe. There's no reason why New Zealand can't do that and also fulfill our environmental obligations at the same time.
That was ACT MP Simon Court about the party's environmental policies, including their proposed changes to the RMA, freshwater management and renewable energy.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.